Hi. Would you still love me if I was a 5-mana 5/5 worm? Kira.
Hi. I ate the sun. Maya.
Welcome back to another Edge of Eternity's spoiler card episode. This episode is sponsored by Wizards of the Coast. Standard play season rewards are coming to your participating Australia and New Zealand WPN stores starting July 25th. Participate in 4 eligible events to receive exclusive Edge of Eternity's rewards, including a Endstone magnet and station identifier patches. Redeem your rewards from July 25th until September 18th, available on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last. Now, let's warp into the episode. I'm so excited for this set. Everything in this set just looks fantastic.
There's so much juice. It hits all the banger numbers for me, right? It's got incredibly good cards. It's got amazing art. The theming is banging. The bonus sheet, unimaginably great. So cool. Ancient tomb? Cavern? Yes, please.
There's even a worm. We are doing our now time-honored tradition of picking out cards that we think are going to be really interesting and standard. This is not a financial advice podcast.
We're also not pro Magic players, so we're very much picking cards that we think are like powerful and interesting, but not necessarily the cards we think are going to see 4-up play in standard, because as the wonderful Ben Tutman showed us, we are bad at picking standard cards.
But that's not going to stop us, and it never will stop us. So
we're podcasters, of course not.
We're starting off with Cosmogrand Zenith.
Cosmogrand Zenith is 2 and a white for a creature human soldier. It has, whenever you cast your second spell each turn, choose one. Create 2/1/1 white human soldier creature tokens, or put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. It is a 2/4.
This card's awesome.
This card's really interesting.
This card's so cool.
It does. A lot of people showed me this card and was like, ha, Corey Steelcutter's back. And I don't think that's what this is, to be very, very clear. This strikes me as something that is much closer to a Monastery Mentor than a Corey Steelcutter.
Yes, I would agree with that a lot.
There are so many good places to put this card. It's just ridiculously powerful.
I mean, mono white tokens for one could be really powerful because you can draw off of casting your second spell because you make the human soldier creature token. If you've got your caretaker's talent, you draw a card. Like, that could be really good.
Yeah, it could make for a really powerful closer in like a white-based aggressive deck. But to me, it really screams of being in a like white X mid-range deck. I think this is going to be like a 3-mana powerhouse mythic.
Could also be really good in some of these green-white Selesnya creature-based strategies have been popping off lately, and this could be a really good top end for that. I see this doing well also in a green-white Innkeeper's Talent world where, you know, second level of Innkeeper's Talent is creatures with +1/+1 counters on them have ward one. You cast your second spell, you put a +1/+1 counter on everything, you give everything ward one. Seems pretty good to me.
It's also worth noting that double spelling in this format is really easy, and you do want to double spell with this. To be perfectly clear, this is a 4 or 5 mana spell because you're casting this spell and then another thing to trigger the ability. Because if you don't do that, your opponent can interact with it pretty easily on a 1-to-1 basis, which is pretty much the worst case scenario for this card. It is worth noting that in the context of a mid-range shell, this might not be as good as it reads, just because a lot of the times in mid-range shells where you're trading on card quality, you have a small amount of card quantity, right? You and your opponent are often in a top deck war. And if you draw this card, you need to wait until you draw another spell. Otherwise, your opponent will be able to 1-for-1 it with something like a Hardlight Containment. And that is the worst case scenario for this card. This card is really, really good, but you need to get its trigger for it to be functional. Otherwise, it's just a 3-mana 2/4. The other place I could see this is in an Azorius Oculus shell. Because of the loss of the pain lands, the mana in Jeskai Oculus, which is the current iteration of the deck, is a lot worse. And as a result, they're going to naturally be more inclined to play a more consistent version of the deck because you lose that consistency explosiveness trade-off. And if that's the case, there is a good chance we just see this card going because it's a 3-mana threat that you play this in another spell, like an Opt or a Charter Course, and all of a sudden you have a very threatening board. It bypasses the need for the graveyard, but it also does, incidentally, just kind of work pretty well with Helping Hand. Casting this card for one mana is really good because it lets you get to double spell and hold up, say, a negate.
This card reads to me very much like Preacher of the Schism. A three mana 2/4 with upsides. Obviously, the triggers from Preacher of the Schism are quite different. Preacher of the Schism is a 3 mana, 2 and a black, death touch, 2/4. Whenever this creature attacks, the player with the most life or tied for the most life, create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. Whenever this creature attacks while you have the most life or are tied for the most life, you draw a card and you lose 1 life. Different effects, but fills what I would consider the same stabilizing point in your game plan.
Interesting. I would contest that because I think this is a 4-drop.
Sure, because you want to cast a second spell to activate the ability. Sure, I see that.
Yeah, Preacher of the Schism is really good, and I actually think there will be a deck that plays both those cards. I think there is going to be a black-white mid-range shell. Yay, definitely not wistful thinking or anything. That plays both Preacher of the Schism and this card because they're incredibly powerful in and of themselves, and they can take over a game. Yeah, this card's just going to be good.
This card's going to be good. It's got a really good effect.
There's no two ways about it, really. This card's just good.
The next card we want to talk about is the Anti-Causal Vestige. This is a 6-mana Eldrazi. When this creature leaves the battlefield, draw a card. Then you may put a permanent card with mana value less than or equal to the number of lands you control from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. And it has warp 4. And I pointed this out to you earlier. It has, and it's a 7/5. It has 4/5/6/7 on it.
Because it has
warp, yeah, 4, warp toughness 4. 5, mana value 6, power 7.
Seems pretty good.
It's really, I don't know if it means anything. I just think it's kind of silly and interesting.
Yeah, it's funny and neat in a way that Eldrazi often are. I'm not sure exactly how yet, but this card seems busted. And maybe I'm thinking about this from an Eternal format perspective, but putting things into play without paying their costs is always going to be powerful. And there's a world where you cast this for its warp cost and you flicker it with a flicker effect, or there is some other use case that is really, really good. This has incredibly high upside, and the fact that it draws a card and replaces itself is really important. In my mind, the most obvious use case for this is as a way to put Oculus into play, right? 4 colorless mana, draw a card, put an Oculus into play tapped, and now you have this 6-mana threat that's sitting there for later. That seems perfectly reasonable. But it might even be powerful and strong in a mid-range shell, because it is 4 mana, it replaces itself in both card and battlefield presence, and then kind of like sits over there for later. It's colorless, which means it has the potential to see play in any color combination. Like, imagine paying 4 mana, drawing a card, and putting Bright Glass Gear Hulk into play, and then having this Anti-Causal Vestige sitting away in the warp zone or whatever.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it seems like quite strong, and it seems strong specifically in mid-range mirrors. Now, are we going to see mid-range mirrors in a world of Cauldron VB? Who knows? But if we do, I think this genuinely could be quite powerful.
I think this card is awesome. I would really like to see how people abuse it. Similar to, like you said, obviously not in standard, but you cast an Ephemerate on this. Okay. Like, see, it just seems really good. The effect seems really good. And like you said, anything is better when it says draw a card. Any card is better when it says draw a card on it. And the ability, like you said, you can cheat an Oculus into play, which is really good because we mentioned in our rotation episode, we lost one of the consequential ways to reanimate Oculus out of the graveyard. We lost Recommission with rotation. And so getting another way to bring out an Oculus, pretty good. Obviously, we lost a really important piece of the Oculus archetype with losing Recommission to rotation. And the mana cost and the sink that you put into this is quite different. You have 2 mana for Recommission versus 4 for Anti-Causal Vestige. But if you think about it, it's kind of an okay upscaling. You get to draw a card. You get to put a permanent into play. Seems all right. You know, Recommission, you got it with a +1/+1 counter on it. And with Anti-Causal Vestige, it'll come in tapped. But it feels kind of much of a muchness, you know what I mean?
And it bypasses the graveyard again, which is a generically powerful effect when you're skipping additional costs. The last thing I will say is that because it's colorless, it might also make it possible for multicolor decks to splash particular enablers that they can only put in play, or their like main game plan is to put in play through Anti-Causal Vestige that they wouldn't be able to put into play using just their lands.
Would also like to point out that something I've like just kind of zoomed in on here. When this creature leaves the battlefield, draw a card, and then you may put a permanent card. You could put another land onto the battlefield.
Yes.
You could ramp with this. Is it the best 4-mana ramp draw a card spell? No. But you could.
Growth Spiral's not that bad.
Growth Spiral, again, 2-mana.
Yeah, well.
But still, that's not terrible. We don't really have an effect like that where you have the option to choose a land, right? Like I think this is a really interesting card. I'm very curious to see where it goes.
Keep an eye on it. This card has the wording to potentially be very, very busted in the future. I don't think it's there now, but with one or two flicker effects or a weirdly printed, like a weirdly worded permanent with additional costs, this card's going to get real good real quick.
Charmed, I'm sure.
We are talking about Arch Enemy's Charm next. It is black, black, black for an instant. It says choose one. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Return one or two target creature and or planeswalker cards from your graveyard to your hand. Put two +1/+1 counters on target creature you control. It gains lifelink until end of turn. Kira, you like mono black, right?
I've been known to play mono black before.
What does this card do in mono black?
This is exclusively a mono black card. 3 black pips means you pretty much only play this in a mono black shell. Instant speed exile removal? Good. Fantastic. This is a different lean on Anoint with Affliction, which we are losing in rotation, or we have lost in rotation, rest in peace. This is also really good card advantage in extended mirror matches when you are able to pull pivotal cards back out of your graveyard and put them into your hand. It hits planeswalkers, which is very useful to be able to have that mode in a card that's as versatile as this, as opposed to something like, I'm going to say Feed the Swarm, and I don't think Feed the Swarm actually hits planeswalkers. I think it's creatures and enchantments. But in your modal spells, being able to hit planeswalkers is really important. This can also be a very effective way to stabilize a game against an aggressive deck, being able to grant lifelink to a creature at instant speed as well. Also very good. And to make it bigger, you put 2 +1/+1 counters, and it gains lifelink until end of turn. With Shieldred the Apocalypse and Archfiend of the Dross rotating, it's not really compelling to play black right now. You are losing, and especially as we talked in our rotation episode, Anoint with Affliction, gone. Go for the Throat, gone. Cut Down, gone. Liliana the Veil, gone. Black as a color in the color wheel feels very weak right now. It feels like it lost its very big, very heavy hitters, its very consequential cards. And so a card like this is really good to kind of underpin the archetype and to reinforce it. You know, we also lost Gix's Command. We also lost the Cruelty of Gix. There's heaps that black lost in this rotation. But if there is a mono black deck, if it's a mono black demon deck, or if there's a mid-range deck running around, this card's going to be in it because it's going to be important to either remove a threat, get your own threats back, or stabilize.
Black having 3-mana exile Hero's Downfall is just really good, I think. And it will go everywhere. And there, you know, there are still powerful black cards. We still have Bob. We still have Deep Cavern Bats. We still have Preacher of the Schism. Black will remain strong as a mid-range color as a, like, additive. So, you know, green-black or white-black or blue-black. I'm not sure if it will be strong enough to see play by itself, but maybe it will. Maybe Unholy Annex is just that good.
I'd like to call the court to order.
Emergency meeting.
Emergency meeting. The court is in session now. I would like to vote out. Wait, what's that? What's that like? Survivor. It's time to vote someone off the island. We're voting you off the planet. The next card we want to talk about is Vote Out. Vote Out is a 3 and a black sorcery with Convoke. For those of you who need a reminder what Convoke is, Convoke, your creatures can help cast this spell. Each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for one generic or one mana of that creature's color. And it says, destroy target creature.
Convoke is very powerful. In many cases, this is going to be a free removal spell. It is worth noting that this is not in the color set that traditionally goes wide, right? The deck that a card like this would go in recent memory was Jeskai, right? We've got the Jeskai Convoke that was using Knight Errant of Eos and Gleeful Demolition to generate a very wide board. And while we have seen a few cards to that effect in recent sets with Voyager Glidecar, and we still have Warden of the Sky, we have the Novice Inspector as well. There are still cards to that effect, but there isn't quite that same density of them. The home I can see for this is in a black-white midrange shell. I've said that a lot today, just saying. Especially with the aforementioned Cosmogrand Zenith. The fact that you can cast Cosmogrand Zenith and then a spell and make 2/1s and then cast this for one mana is very, very strong. It being a sorcery is a significant downside, because it means that if you convoke the creatures to blow up a thing, you can't then block with them, which means that it's going to be less useful against an aggro deck than it is going to be against an opposing midrange deck. But free spells, good. As a blanket rule, something that has a potential to be free or very low cost is always something that we are going to look at and we're going to put a little asterisk next to and be like, there is probably something over the course of its life in Standard that is going to make this card very, very strong, because it's a strong effect with a strong cost reducer. Card's just interesting, and it's going to be a nightmare in Limited. I'm so excited. Kira.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Bug?
I want to talk about bugs. I want to talk about scientist bugs.
Scientist bugs? Science bugs?
The bugs have jobs now. This is Biotech Specialist. It is a red and a green for a creature insect scientist. When this creature enters, create a lander token. And a lander token is a new type of token that has been introduced in Edge of Eternities. Lander token, it is an artifact with 2, tap, sacrifice this token, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. Biotech Specialist also says, whenever you sacrifice an artifact, this creature deals 2 damage to target opponent, and it's a 1/3. Man, this seems like a combo card.
Yeah, this is my mandatory addition to the 5 combo card that is never going to see play. But, I think this has more chance of seeing play than my previous mentions. Rest in peace, oh great Vinwixt. This card is really interesting. For starters, it is a really nice payoff. Being able to, like, sacrifice a thing, deal 2 damage, that's just good. Mayhem Devil, good card. This, cheaper, very good. It's 2 mana, and I cannot stress how much 2 mana is not very much mana. It leaves something behind when it enters, and it is the kind of thing where you can put it into play. There are play patterns with this card where you put it into play, the trigger goes on the stack to create the token, and you can hold priority and sack a bunch of artifacts, which means that aside from countering the Biotech Specialist, there is not going to be a lot of counterplay to the turns where you play this card in a combo shell that is utilizing it. This card is very scary. It can combo out explicitly with cards like Collar Zealot. This is the new 1 and a black creature that says sacrifice a creature or artifact to surveil one. But it can also just like generate really powerful incidental value in an aggressive shell, especially when you're cracking treasure tokens, where that was the first thing that jumped out to me, is that this card seems very, very strong in a shell that is generating a lot of treasure tokens. Now, maybe that's more of a commander thing than a standard thing. But we are, again, at the start of this card's life in Standard. So as more and more interesting artifacts get printed, the scarier this gets. I kind of doubt there's a current home for it in Standard, but we really do have to watch the new sets for egg-type effects and artifact synergies and things that let you freely sack artifacts. I think it is going to be relatively easy to turn this card into a kill from, like, 10 in a red-based aggressive artifact deck. Something like the green-red Delirium deck that already exists in maybe a slightly different form.
This card looks really cool. I'm always a really big fan of Gruul as a color pairing. One of the first decks that I ever played in Standard was a Gruul Landfall deck back in the Zendikar Rising era. I like ramping. I like green-red. I like dealing damage to my opponents. I'm really curious as to see where this is going to end up. And like you said, there's going to be instances in which, you know, you can play things like Seize the Spoils, which, you know, discard, draw, create a treasure token. 2 damage on the board now. You have things like Soul Guide Lantern, which you can sacrifice to then exile each player's graveyard. 2 damage. You have Glittering Barricade, which when it dies, creates a treasure token. I don't know if I already said that.
You have Nesting Bot, which is just 2 artifacts in a trench coat. And you just play this in a sack outlet and you deal them 4.
The only thing you have to be careful about is adding more colors to this pie. Because I can also see a world in which this is played in like a Sibsig Ceremony deck.
Oh, where you play a lot of
where you play a lot of colorless artifact creatures and you sacrifice them to, like, you know, the only deal is, right, sacrificing and dying is different. Sibsig destroys it. So it interacts a little bit differently. But who's to say? Like, it could be really interesting if there's a way in which to value out more treasure tokens. And like you said, you know, then you just get passive benefits for using your treasure tokens to cast more spells. I'm really curious. Seems really interesting.
Yeah, if this is a 2-mana 2/3 that consistently deals your opponent... Oh, sorry, 2-mana 1/3 that consistently deals your opponent 4 damage, then I think this card is good enough for Standard, right? 2-mana 1/3, deal 4 to your opponent, would see play. So if there is a shell that can enable that with only small concessions to the way that its deck is built, then yeah, I think this card's just going to be good. Overall, I just think this set looks super interesting.
I love this set. I've said it before, I'll say it again. My set of the year. I am so, so happy. I love space. I love warp.
And there are so many cards that I haven't talked about that I really, really want to, like Spaceship Nemesis Combo and the new Thoughtseize. The set looks really interesting. It's really powerful. There's a density of just kind of cracked cards. And they've done a really good job of exploring new design space because we're kind of in a new setting for Magic at the moment. Space is not a place that Magic has spent a lot of time exploring, and that's really exciting, and I love it.
Space is the place to be.
Damn.
With all that said, that's all we've got for you today. We look forward to welcoming you back next week. New episodes air on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Until then, you can keep track of all of our releases at RaiseMTG, both Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find me on the same platforms at Kira Bobira and Maya at MayaMTG. A huge thank you to the State Library of Victoria for the ongoing use of their space. And until next time, remember, when packing for a stealth mission, it's important to fold your dimensions tightly.